cool, cool of the evening.
Tell them I'll be there
in the cool, cool, cool of the evening.
Save your pappy a chair when the party's getting a glow on, and singing fills the air in the shank of the night. When the dudes are right, well, you can tell them I'll be there.
I like a barbecue.
I like to boil a ham.
And I vote for bouillabaisse stew.
What's that? I'd like a weenie baked steak and a layer cake.
And you'll get a tummy ache too.
We'll rent a tent or a teepee.
Woo woo.
Let the town crier cry.
All's well.
And if it's RSVP, this is what I'll reply. In the cool, cool, cool of the evening, tell them we'll be there. If you need a pair of freeloaders to fracture your affair, I may even give them Pagliacci.
Now stand back and give him air.
Everyone can relax and we'll have a few yaks.
And you can tell them we'll be there. We said the bumblebee, let's have a jubilee. When said the prairie hen, soon.
Sure, said the dinosaur. Where, said the grizzly bear, under the light of the moon.
How about your brother jackass? Everyone gaily cried. Are you coming to the fracket?
He gon' blow it.
And over his specs he sighed.
In the cool, cool, cool of the evening, tell him I'll be there. In the cool, cool, cool of the evening, stick him on my head. Perchance we look a bit peaked. Remember, sail again. If we're still on our feet and there's something to eat, well, you can tell them we'll be there.
When the party's getting the glow on and singing fills the air,
if there's gas in my hack and my laundry is back,
if there's room for one more and you need me,
why sure.
If you need a new face or a tenor or bass,
if I can climb out of bed and put a head on my head,
well, you can tell them we'll be there.
From the city by the Golden Gate, this is KSSR-DB San Francisco, Swing Street Radio.
Where the big bands swing.
It's time for Yesteryear, a look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, it's Midsummer Lunacy with Barry Craig, confidential investigator. But first, on the lighter side, let's enjoy a game of football with Abbott and Costello. Bud Abbott and Lou Costello, remembered primarily as a movie team, got their first shove toward stardom in radio and stayed with the medium through the 1940s when their fame as film comics was at its height. They brought an old-style vaudeville slapstick to radio, a stand-up comedy team that consisted mainly of short skits involving clever plays on words. Signed by Universal Pictures in 1939, they almost single-handedly bailed the financially troubled studio out of the red. Their own regular show on radio began October of 1942, continuing for 5 years on NBC. Their air skits were often extensions of the routines they'd used on stage back in their vaudeville years. The famous baseball spoof, Who's On First, was developed for a live audience, but was especially adaptable for radio. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Bud Abbott and Lou Costello and special guest star Harold Perry in The Football Game from January of 1944. Another classic show from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow knows. Fred Allen, Sally Folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern. Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Bert and Marge, Amos and
the Abbott and Costello program. Listen to the music of Freddie Rich and his orchestra, the songs of Connie Haynes. Tonight's guest, Harold Perry, and starring Bud Abbott and Lou Costello.
Hey, Abbott!
Now what's wrong? What's wrong now?
Boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Hey, Abbott, terrible thing just happened.
What happened?
I was invited down to the shipyards where they're building a brand new ship, and I got caught between two guys that was throwing hot rivets.
And what happened?
What happened? One of those red hot rivets landed in my back pocket.
Yes?
Before I knew it, I was 4 miles out to sea. Under my own steam, too.
How do they save you, Lou? Did they throw you a breeches boy?
No, I came back without any breeches, kid.
No. Well, you made a fool of yourself again.
Yeah, but I burned my bridges behind me.
Oh, talk sense. What were you doing down at the shipyards in the first place?
I forgot to tell you. See, Abbott, my cousin Hugo was a sailor down there. He's in the signal corps.
The signal corps?
Yeah, he keeps signal his mother to get him out.
Oh.
I'm so ashamed of my cousin Hugo.
You are?
I mean, after all, the Costellos have always been very brave people. My great-grandfather was a colonel in the army.
A colonel?
Yeah.
Colonel. You got me that
word. Colano, that's a pretty high rank.
No, not Colano.
It is.
No, you see, that word is pronounced Colonel.
Colonel?
Yes, Colonel. Where did he fight?
Oh, my uncle. He fought with the original 13 Colonelies.
No, Costello, that's Colony.
Oh, Colony. You said it was Colonely.
No.
Colonely. Now, make up your mind.
Look, it's very simple. In military parlance, C-O-L is pronounced Cur, as
Cur.
In Colonel.
Yeah.
Don't you know that?
Oh, no, I never went to college.
Oh.
Not me.
Yes, I know.
I quit school at the age of 1st.
All right, that's enough.
Well, it ain't all right. After I quit school, I got a job in Vertival.
In Vertival?
A juggler.
A juggler? Look, are you finished?
No, one more.
What?
Abbott, what? Well, that's your line.
Yeah.
Costello.
Well, what is it? Now, what's next?
Never mind. That joke sunk.
Look, will you cut it out? I have something important to tell you. Mrs. Niles called up a few minutes ago, and she wants you to take care of her nephew, little Hector.
Not little Hector.
Get it
for me, brother. I ain't going to take care of that little brat.
What?
Not me, brother.
Oh, no. You mean you don't like little Hector?
Oh, I like him.
Well, that's swell.
I'd like to give him a present.
What kind of a present?
Oh, a broken shoulder blade.
That's no way to talk. What did little Hector ever do to you?
What did he do?
Yeah.
Like the guy, he poured a bottle of ink in my bathtub last year.
Last year?
Yeah.
Did you speak to him about it?
No, I only discovered it yesterday.
Oh, hey, wait a minute. Here's Ken and Mrs. Niles now. We were expecting you, Ken.
Well, I'm sorry I'm late, Bud. My wife and I just got back from a hunting trip.
Yes, I got a moose head.
Well, put a hat over your antlers and nobody will notice it.
Pay no attention to Costello, Mrs. Niles. He's a little tired. He just came from launching a ship.
He just launched a ship? Oh, that must have been a pretty picture. One tub launching another.
That was wonderful, dear. That was wonderful. What a clever remark. No wonder I go for you.
Oh, and Kenneth, I go for you.
I go for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard from Mr. and Mrs. Gopher.
I love that. Come on now, cut it out, Costello. Say, Mrs. Niles, where's little Hector?
Oh, he's outside playing. I'll get him. Oh, Hector, darling, come in here, dear.
Yes, Annie Niles, I was looking for Mr. Costello's crazy cat.
Who ever told you I had a crazy cat?
Annie Niles, she said, wait till I get a load of your silly puss.
See why I hate the kid?
Oh, isn't little Hector cute?
Come here, kid. I think you're very cute, too. Come here, do me a favor.
Yeah, what?
Let me pinch your windpipe.
Costello, now.
Well, I mean, hey, Hector, look. Why don't you just walk around the block? And if you're not back in 3 days, that'll be fine.
Okay. Oh, don't mind Hector, Mr. Costello. He's just faithful. Why, the other day, he gently kicked me in the face.
Mrs. Niles, I hope he didn't knock any of your teeth out.
How could he? She had them in her back pocket all the time.
Come, Kenneth. We'll be back for Hector tonight.
Oh, now listen. Now look, I'm not going to get stuck with this kid, Hector. Now look, Hector, come here. Go on home to your mother, will you, kid?
But my mama ain't home. She's downtown buying a gun for my old man.
Buying a gun? Did your father tell her what kind to get?
No. He doesn't even know she's going to shoot him.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, this kid is dangerous.
Oh, come, he's only playing.
Playing? Yesterday, he stuck his grandfather's head in the stove and sang, smoke gets in your eye.
Hector, that was a terrible thing to do.
Yeah, it was. It put the fire out.
Little Hector, listen, I know a very good game. I'll tell you what I'd like to have you do. I'll turn on the electric fan, and you stick your hand in it. No, that ain't going to hurt much.
No, I want to play cowboys and Indians. Look, I brought my BB gun.
Don't point that gun at me, it might go off.
I even told the kid not to point it at me.
All right, take it easy.
Hey, Abbott.
What?
He shot me right in the eye.
Are those BBs in your face?
Well, it ain't caviar. Here, give me that thing. I'm going to shoot the rest of these BBs right out the window.
Oh! Who shot that gun out of the window?
Who wants to know?
I do. Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve.
Mr. Gildersleeve, those shots, sir, were an accident. Where did he get you?
Between my bay window and the back porch. And furthermore, one of those BBs lodged in my head.
Lodged in your head? I don't believe it. Shake your head once.
All right, I will.
He's right, Abbott. Can you imagine a little BB all alone in that big head?
You got a lot of nerve to talk about my head. The last time I saw a head like yours, it was in a bottle.
Now, wait a minute, boys. Let's settle this thing like gentlemen.
But he ain't going to blame this on me. That was all that little Hector's fault.
You mean this innocent little child here? Why, he has an angelic face. He has a heavenly look.
You got your directions mixed.
Now, look here, Costello. You're not going to blame this on anybody else. I demand satisfaction. Put up your fists and fight like a man.
Okay, Abbott, this guy's asking for it. Give me a piece of chalk.
What are you going to do with it?
What am I going to do with it? I'm going to draw a line right here on the floor. Right over there. Now, come on, Gildersleeve. I dare you to step over that line.
Well, I stepped over the line. Now what?
Yeah. Now you're on my side.
Blacked out and loaded with munitions, the commando transport plane rises up over the hump, north and east, over the mountains to China. They've got what it takes, the men who fly the air freighters, and so has their cigarette, Camels. First with men in all the services, according to actual sales records. Yes, Camel cigarettes are going to our men in China, too. And when they arrive, they're fresh, cool smoking and slow burning, because Camels are packed to go around the world. Freshness is one of the reasons why more people want Camel cigarettes now, both at home and overseas. Freshness and more flavor, too. More flavor, the result of Camel's matchless blend of costlier tobaccos. So remember, if your store is sold out today, try tomorrow. Camel cigarettes are worth asking for again.
C-A-M-E-L-S.
Camel cigarettes. Camel's tobacco standard is the same for soldier, for civilian, anywhere in the world. Freddie Rich and the orchestra dancing in the dark.
That's just your imagination.
No, it ain't, Abbott. I was so restless that I tossed and tossed until my nose got caught in my ear.
You got your nose caught in your ear? Why, yeah. That's terrible.
Sure, I sneezed and almost blew my brains out. Oh, now, who was that? Come in.
Good afternoon, Mr. Abbott and Mr. Costello. Is Lippo Hector here? I'm Pommy Pumpkins. I live 2 blocks down the street.
You live 2 blocks down the strip? What kind of talk is this?
Mr. Costello, that's the way Tommy talks. He can't say the letter T. He makes it sound like a poof.
Hey, do that again. It's very cooling.
Look, what did you want with little Hector, Tommy?
I came over here to practice my music with little Hector. See, I brought my trumpet.
Trumpet? You mean trumpet.
That's it, the trumpet.
This guy sounds like a nitwit.
But Tommy is a very good trumpet player.
You set up. Mr. Costello, you're talking for the most prolific trumpet player that ever pulled a pirate trumpet from Timbuktu to Tennessee. Want to hear me play a poon on my trumpet?
No.
Well, how about the clarinet? I play the clarinet, the trombone, and the pooba.
Oh, no, you don't play the pooba. A pooba's what you keep your toothpaste in to brush your peep. Now the guy's got me talking like this.
Costello, please, don't make fun of Tommy. He comes from a very high-class family. He was born with a silver spoon in his mouth.
Why don't he take it out when he talks?
Oh, come on, Lippo Hector. Let's play a Lippo Poon. Mr. Costello, you want to hear Cold Pauper's Knife and Day?
Knife and Day? Why don't you play Pip-Po Pruda Pulis?
Oh, that's great. Follow me, Lippo Hector. In tempo, 1, 2, 3.
Brother. I said, that's enough, brother. Will you guys shut up? Cut it out! Break it up!
All right. Look, Hector, why don't you and your friend Tommy go out in the yard and play?
Yeah, here, you can have my football, the one I used when I used to play with Marquette.
You played with the University of Marquette in Wisconsin?
No, with the Fish Marquette in Glendale.
Oh, boy.
Hey, Abbott, look. right, kids. Now get out. Get the kids out, will you, Abbott? Look, go on out in the backyard and I'll show you how I used to kick the ball. Now look, I'm going to show you the kick that won the great big game. Here, Hector, you hold the ball. I'll kick it. Abbott, you catch it.
Yeah, but suppose you kick little Hector's head.
Well, you'll have to catch that too.
Oh.
Okay, kids, get ready. Here we go.
Who kicked that football through my window?
Hey, it's Gildersleeve. Let's run. Now, what's the matter? What's the matter?
Yeah, but that darn clothesline.
Did it get you?
No, I always wear my nose side saddle. Did it get me?
Don't you try to run away, Costello. You kicked that football through my window. It bounced off my high boy and put a nick in the leg of my secretary.
Your secretary?
Yeah. An old Duncan Pike.
Where does she get that stuff?
My secretary's been in my family for 200 years.
Faithful, isn't she?
Oh, keep quiet, Costello. Well, look, Gildersleeve, the whole thing was an accident. Costello was just showing us what a great football player he was in school.
In school?
Mm-hmm.
Costello, who'd you ever play for? Subnormal?
Did you ever have that laugh dry clean?
Don't try and evade the issue, Costello. You're talking to the greatest football player who ever went to Princeton.
All right, prove it. Where are your football pants?
Well, that shows how stupid you are, Costello. Footballs don't wear pants.
Say, Gildersleeve, did you ever play in the Princeton-Yale game?
Oh, I'll never forget that game, Abbott. I can still picture myself sweeping down the field. I swept over the 50-yard line, over the 40, the 30. I swept past the 20-yard line. As I was sweeping toward the goal line, it happened.
Were you tackled?
No, he broke his broom.
Well, there's only one way to settle this argument. Why don't you challenge each other to a football game?
That's a great idea, Abbott. It's the only thing that'll satisfy my honor. We Gildersleeves are a proud lot.
You're a vacant lot. I think I got the kid going, Pa. He's getting mad.
Costello, we'll meet in 1 hour. If I should not emerge victorious, I shall retire to a mountain fastness, where, as a measure of self-punishment, I shall wedge my neck in the crotch of a tree and allow the woodpeckers to peck on my cranium at regular 5-minute intervals. Yes.
Yeah? Well, listen, Gildersleeve. If I don't win this game, I'm going to retire to the cellar of Tony's Fish Market, where I will tie myself to a pickle barrel and have Tony slap me in the puss with a wet barracuda. Not every 5 minutes, not every 3 minutes, not every 10 seconds, but Sunday.
Monday and always.
By special request, Connie Haynes repeats one of the top tunes of the season, Shoo Shoo Baby.
Shoo 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 Baby. Shoo 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 Baby. Don't cry, baby. Your papa's off to seven seas. Don't cry, baby. Don't sigh, baby. Bye, 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 baby. When I come back, live life with you. She's kind of tough now to say goodbye this way. Papa's gonna be rough now. So he'd be sweet to you another day. Shoo, 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 baby. Shoo, 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 baby. Don't cry, baby. Your papa's off to the seven seas. Don't cry, don't sigh. Baby's here waiting for her papa. Don't cry, don't sigh. It seems nothing will ever stop her. Baby, shoo, 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 shoo my baby. Shoo, 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 shoo my baby. Your papa's off to the seven seas.
Camel cigarettes. They're first in the service. They've got what it takes.
ladies and gentlemen. This is Ken Niles, your sportscaster, speaking to you direct from Google's parking lot overlooking the city dump. There is a strong wind sweeping across the field at this moment, and most of the crowd is leaving. We are about to give you a word picture of this great football classic between the Gildersleeve Nanny Goats and the Costello Morons.
Pardon me, that's Maroons.
And now for a last-minute interview, we take you to Lou Costello's dressing room. Take it away, Flash Farrell.
Thank you, Ken Niles. Phew. This is Flash Farrell speaking from the Morons' dressing room.
That's me, folks.
Mr. Costello? I understand that this game is the result of a personal challenge. Is it true that you don't know the meaning of the word trepidation?
That's right.
And is it true that you don't know the meaning of the word cowardice?
That's right.
You're pretty brave.
No, I'm pretty ignorant.
Take it away, Ken Niles.
Thank you, Flash Farrell. And now for a word from the opposing captain, we switch you to Gildersleeve's dressing room and Red Harbor.
Thank you, Ken Niles. Here we are in the Nanny Goat's dressing room. Gildersleeve looks in great shape. Say, Mr. Gildersleeve, I see you're wearing your old school sweater.
Oh, yes, Princeton University. Yes, sir, I was the biggest PU man on the campus.
Phew. Thank you, Gildersleeve. And now, back to Ken Niles.
Okay, Red Harbor. Both teams are coming on the field now, and we switch to Bud Abbott.
Right, Ken Niles. Now let's listen to Gildersleeve's Nanny Goats singing their alma mater.
Mammy, Mammy, the Nanny Goats you'll find will always come from behind for alma mater.
Phew. Phew. And now on the other side of the field, we pick up Lou Costello's band and glee club.
Hip hop, protopole, 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 hip hop, protopole, with me.
Beam, beam, beam.
Just a minute. What do you think you're doing here?
Now, don't bother me now, Mrs. Niles. We're going to play football.
But where is little Hector?
What do you think we're using for a football?
Costello, the game's about to start. Where's your football helmet?
I don't need a helmet.
But how are you going to protect your head?
I'm wearing my hair piled up this season.
Well, folks, the moment is here, and we take you to the midfield stripe where the opposing captains are shaking hands in their usual friendly manner.
Oh, I warn you, Costello. You try to carry the ball through my line, I'll climb you like a tree.
And a monkey like you can do it.
Costello, remember sportsmanship.
I'm not afraid of him, Abbott. Listen, Costello, I'll hit you on the top of your head so hard I'll drive your head down into your ribs. When you open your eyes, you'll think you're in jail.
Jiggers, the cop!
No. No, come here. Come here, that's the referee.
Cop, no more patrol wagons.
No, that's the referee.
Last time I had to stand up.
Now, that's the referee.
All right, boys, let's start the game. All right. He's
in. Well, the game's about to start. Costello is kicking off to Gildersleeve, and Costello's toe meets the pigskin.
Wait. Gee, that was a great kick, Costello. Gildersleeve's got the ball. Go ahead and tackle him.
Okay, I got him.
Costello. You double-jointed?
No. Why?
And I think I broke your leg.
The joke's on you. I always wear my leg in my back pocket. Hey, I don't like the way you tickle, Gildy.
You mean tackle. You don't know your football.
I mean tickle. You don't know your mustache.
Come on, Gildy. Let's start the play.
Right. Signals. 1, 2, butt my shoe. 3, 4, shut the door. Hike!
Costello. Gildy's running around his own end.
He's running around his own end? That's a neat trick if he can do it.
But quick, grab him. Come on, grab him.
Ooh, ow! Referee!
What is that?
Did you see what happened?
Yes, I did, and I penalized you 15 yards for interference.
Interference? Gildersleeve kicked me right in the push.
I don't believe it. You wouldn't do a thing like that, would you, Gildy?
No, Uncle Ralph.
Up.
Look, stop complaining, Costello. It's your turn to carry the ball. Now, let's see you make a touchdown.
Okay, Abbott, watch me. Signal, 1, 2. What comes after two?
Three.
Oh, three.
I knew you went to subnormal.
Look, I'll call the signal. One, two, three, four. Say, Costello, what comes after four?
Six.
No, it's five.
Oh. How do you know?
I got my shoes off. I'm counting on my toes.
Get ready, then. Signals. One, two, three, four, five, hike.
Oh, boy. I got the ball, Abbott. One tackler down. Two tacklers. Three tacklers. I'm going to make a touchdown, Abbott.
No, you won't, Costello. I'm right in back of you. I got you.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Abbott, we can't lose now.
Why not?
I'm out in the open.
And now here's Abbott and Costello with the final word.
Thanks, Ken. Well, Gilly, it was swell to have you with us tonight. That was a pretty tough football game.
Yes, it was. I think Costello and I better take inventory. Let me see now. I've got two arms.
And I got two arms.
And I've got two legs.
And I got two legs. Wait a minute, Gildersleeve. I'll never be able to face my public again.
Why not?
I'm wearing your hat.
Oh, get out of here. Good night, folks.
Good night, folks. Good night, neighbors. Be sure to tune in next week for another great Abbott and Costello show with our special guest, Miss Janet Blair. Harold Perry, the great Gildersleeve, appeared tonight through the courtesy of the Kraft Cheese Company. This is Ken Niles wishing you a very pleasant good night from Hollywood.
From January of 1944, it's been Bud Abbott and Lou Costello with special guest star Harold Perry. In a moment, Midsummer Lunacy with Barry Craig, confidential investigator, as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Barry Craig, confidential investigator, is one of the few detective radio series that had separate versions of it broadcast from both coasts. NBC produced the program from its New York studios from 1951 to 1954, then moved it to Hollywood, where it aired from 1954 to 1955. William Gargan, who also played the better-known television and radio detective Martin Kane, was the voice of New York detective Barry Craig, while Ralph Bell portrayed his associate, Lieutenant Travis Rogers. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesterday. Year with Barry Craig, confidential investigator, and the case of Midsummer Lunacy from August of 1954. Another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Sudden loss of weight might be cause for anxiety, but one good thing at least, it makes the pallbearer's job a whole lot lighter.
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Barry Craig speaking. Once every year, an epidemic of lunacy sweeps across the nation. Some call it midsummer madness. You get sunstroke by day and moonstruck by night. I got my dose of it in a resort hotel. Jubilee Villa, the big neon sign across the roof said. Jubilee Villa, where days were given to pinochle and golf, and nights were given to lawn dancers under big sheltering pines. Like everybody else, I was dancing. Unlike everybody else, I had a genuine, non-dyed, natural blonde babe in my arms.
Oh, you dance divinely, Barry.
You've only put that in writing, Blondie.
In writing?
I collect testimonials.
Oh.
Blondie was a vacation guest with a ruby mouth and a slim, trim panatella chassis. Not an extra ounce of butterfat or chocolate bonbon anywhere on her. The name she gave was Linda Paris. I was kicking my heels at Jubilee Villa at Linda's own request. She'd phoned me to please come. What she had on her lovely mind, I didn't know yet. I was too busy totaling up what she had on the outside.
Well, I suppose the time has come to talk, Barry.
Cruel words.
You've probably been wondering why I telephoned you and dragged you up here.
I stopped wondering after the second highball.
Down that path there, there's a grape arbor. We can be alone there.
You've enticed me.
Only to talk about my problem.
Oh.
I really do have a problem, Barry.
Yeah, I know, with men. You've had that same one problem since the age of 3, I'll bet. But leave us sojourn. The great barber under the moon with a bewitching blonde at hand means all things to all men. But to a confidential cop, it only means work, police work.
You have facilities for finding out about people.
I do. Now, who do you want to find out about?
Stuart Stoner.
Who's he?
A guest here at the hotel.
So you want a confidential police check on him?
Yes. I want to do the conservative thing before I...
Before getting too enmeshed?
Before getting engaged.
And you're afraid Stuart is a low-down fortune hunter. Is that the number of it?
Oh. Well, he led me to believe that he, too, is rich.
I'm assigned. What are the vital statistics on Stuart Stoner? Hometown, family, business, etc., and so forth.
I know nothing except that his people are supposed to be in Milwaukee society.
You'll know more when I'm through. Milwaukee, here I come. One thing about a long train ride, catch up on your back reading. Came the day after tomorrow, I returned to Jubilee Villa, full of news from Milwaukee. Bad news for Blondie.
It's all so incomprehensible to me.
Then let me repeat myself. There is no Stoner family in Milwaukee society and no young aristocrat named Stuart Stoner.
Then Stuart is a masquerader.
It would seem. And so are you, too, a masquerader, Blondie. I checked both ends of the matrimonial question mark. I'm a bug for thoroughness. Linda Paris of Brockton, Massachusetts. No such she-animal. Now, what's the real name, Blondie?
Mary Ranceroff.
A working girl.
A wage slave.
Department store ribbon cutter?
I'm a manicurist.
You're putting on quite a big show here at Jubilee Villa. Where'd you get the wardrobe? And the $55 a day?
My savings.
Your pitch to snag a rich husband?
It's just as easy to love a rich man.
Touché. All right, assignment completed. Pay me off and kiss me goodbye.
No.
No?
I still want to know about Stuart.
Like you, he's fortune hunting.
Oh. Well, you see...
You go for him. Nevertheless, and notwithstanding. Okay, then. I'll stick around a while. On the day I go, you can call me the guy who murdered Cupid. I didn't buck Stuart Stoner right away. I made a study of him first from afar. Watched his behavior like a guinea pig behind glass. A guinea pig with a pencil-lined mustache. I watched him whack a tennis ball. Well, a nace. I joined in the gallery applause. I watched him elbow up to the oval bar in the cafe lounge. Much too green in the gills for an athlete and a haunted look around his eyes, like sleep came tough. And ordering the type of drink guaranteed to drown anyone's sorrow.
Steve, another one of the same. Double.
I watched him playing cards in the casino. A two-handed game for stakes that could lift the national debt in Pongo Pongo.
Well, that beats me. Guess it's not my night.
Well, better luck tomorrow.
That's what you said yesterday. I'm afraid I'm a little short of cash.
Oh, check is fine, Stoner. And if you're overdrawn at the bank and IOUs, just as good.
$6,000 loss for the afternoon's play. But what made it especially interesting for me was the face of the winner. I knew the face. I'd seen it around, on the streets and in the Rogues Gallery. Lou Latimer, a con man, card sharp, and plain crook. The question I asked myself was, why was a card sharp accepting IOUs from a phony vacationer posing as a son of wealth? Latimer worked like a cop worked. He checked the pedigree of every sucker he sat down to cards with. Latimer had to know that Stuart Stoner was a made-up name. So why was Latimer accepting paper instead of cash? That evening, after a supper orgy of borscht and baked herring, I tackled Stuart Stoner in person. He was sprawled on a hammock, letting the supper digest. Evening.
Hello.
Craig's the name. Barry Craig. You, don't feel sociable?
Frankly, I don't.
That's a surprise.
Why is it surprising?
I've watched you around the clock. Tennis, cards, chit-chat. I've seldom seen a more gregarious and sociable guy.
Well, maybe it's a question of the kind of company.
That remark meaning?
You interpret it.
You draw the line where I'm concerned.
Now, if you don't mind...
You want to be alone.
Look, Mr. Craig, I've an absolute right...
Don't let your thermometer rise, Buster. Who warned you off me?
Why do you say that?
Because that's my guess about our unfriendly little situation. So who was it?
Oh, a friend of mine.
Your card partner, Latimer? What did Latimer tell you? That I was an unsavory character or something?
You're very astute. All right, he warned me that you were, well, some kind of operator. Underhanded, a type that...
Works vacation resort.
Words to that effect, yes.
What have I now told you Latimer was describing himself?
I'd expect you to say that.
You would?
Latimer also told me you'd lie if trapped, that you'd reverse everything. That you were clever like that.
Look, Buster, Latimer's a card sharp and a crook. And let's settle a question of my veracity once and for keeps. I'm a detective. Here, squint your eyes at my credentials.
The badge is authentic?
Did Latimer also warn you that I'd flash a phony chicken inspector's badge?
I'm confused.
So am I. What particularly confuses me is why a smart boy like Latimer would collect your worthless IOUs.
My worthless...
You're here using an alias. The name Stuart Stoner is made up. You've been handing a doll named Linda Paris a line of bunk. You let the impression circulate that you're loaded, filthy rich. But the odds are 100 to 1 you haven't even got it cash enough to pay your board bill. You were saying?
I have nothing to say. Don't please heckle me anymore. I'm spinning.
Yeah, you are. A steaming sweat, and your eyes rolling. You subject to fits?
No. no fits. Just every now and then a feeling of suffocation. Like now, I blank out.
Stoner. Blank out, he did big. Eyes staring blindly and not a flutter to him, hardly a pulse. And his face contorted in ugly red folds, like it was an outside picture of some deep agony inside. I left him as he was and went for help. The house doctor had been gone for almost 20 minutes before Stoner could put words together coherently.
Please, don't broadcast what you saw tonight.
You seemed to slip into a fog then, Stoner. I got the feeling your eyes were seeing sights you were trying to shut out.
My eyes were seeing sights?
The eyes of memory, let's say. Like you were looking over your shoulder into yesterday. Like you were an amnesiac. What's in yesterday that gets you by the throat, Stoner?
Oh, you're talking talk I don't understand.
Stuart Stoner, you call yourself. What's your right name?
Some other time, huh? If you insist on this sort of weird interrogation right now, I just want to go to bed.
Want help getting upstairs?
No, I want nothing from you.
I'll help Stuart to his room. Hello, Stuart.
Margot.
The house doctor told me you'd fainted. I came as soon
Introduce
as
me,
I...
Stoner.
Mr. Craig, Margot Swift.
Hello.
Mr. Craig?
You want him, lady? He's all yours.
Margot, if I can just have your arm.
I watched them move away slowly, her arm around his waist and a love light in her eyes. A tightly trussed look to her figure, cold black hair, colored gypsy kerchiefs around her neck, and a look of experience to her. Older than Stuart, but you'd need her birth certificate to prove it. She was that preserved. Linda and Margot, blonde and brunette. Stoner was doing okay with the ladies. A while later, in my room, while wrestling with a knot in my tie as a prelude to showering before bed, I found a typewritten note propped against my bureau mirror. The management regrets the need to terminate your stay due to a prior reservation made for room 211. Room 211 was my room. It was a deadline noted on the bottom of the eviction note. We would appreciate possession of room 211 by 9 p.m. 9 p.m. was 1 minute away. Correction. It was 9 p.m. I acted calm in the emergency. I tore up the note. That night, I had a crazy dream. I dreamed there was a load of iron hanging from the ceiling like a chandelier. hanging on a line with my head, ready to drop if the length of wire holding it ever snapped. I lay there making book the wire wouldn't snap. I was wrong. It did snap. When the iron dropped, I promptly stopped dreaming. Wake up from a midsummer's night's dream. You can find yourself in strange surroundings. I imagine I found myself on the bottom of a lake. But that was too crazy, even for midsummer. What was a fact was, the lake lay around me only ankle height. I was plopped in reeds that were taller than me. The kind of reeds you find around the edge of country lakes. I had water in my nose and ears. And a stagnant pool of slop in my stomach. If I survived, I'd need a stomach pump. I lay where I was, listening to owl hoots. The owl had hooted himself hoarse before I became aware of the lump on my head. What had actually happened dawned on me very slowly. I'd been slugged senseless in room 211, carried to a nearby lake and tossed in. Attempted murder. Somebody was very careless about whether I lived or died. When I was up to it, I had questions to put to the friendly management of Jubilee Villa. The guy managing Jubilee Villa looked like a wax museum exhibit. Skin you'd hate to touch unless you were a fellow zombie. And horn-rimmed glasses with lenses so thick his eyes magnified into the size of golf balls. A brass nameplate on the desk read Otto Hensa. His attitude towards me was downright contemptuous.
Mr. Craig, you expect me to give credence to this fantastic story?
I do expect.
Mr. Craig, you suffer from sunstroke.
I wear a visor cap in the sun.
Well, then, it is too much to drink. A man with your imagination should never drink.
I've been on buttermilk since I arrived here. Look, Hensa, I don't imagine being slugged and thrown into a lake.
Well, then, at least thank your stars that you are alive.
No fault of my assailants. My guess there is he didn't figure I'd land in a shallow bed.
Then you insist on his preposterous story.
At the top of my lungs. Someone in Jubilee Villa resents my being around. I'm a meddler. There's some scheme afoot and... Wait.
Yes, Mr. Craig.
The management of Jubilee Villa, that's you, wanted me out of the place at 9 p.m. tonight. Why, Hensa?
A prior reservation for room 211.
Sure that's the only reason?
It is the reason, of course.
I didn't comply with the vacate request. I went to bed, and from there I was forcibly evicted. I woke up in a lake.
Mr. Craig, there is no connection between our simple request that you give up your room and this hallucination.
I'm getting awfully tired of you insinuating I'm a nut.
All right, then. I will accept your story.
And your explanation of it on that basis?
A prowler. There have been other incidents, come to think of it. A trespasser entered your room. You were assaulted...
And carried a half mile from my room to the lake.
Mr. Craig, the criminal mind is something unpredictable. There is no logical pattern...
Paul, you've sure been trying to sell me one idea after another, Hensa. Why?
Because I'm perplexed. Like you are perplexed. I think one thing and then I think another.
I see. Right now, Hensa, I'm thinking one thing.
And what is that?
That you could be a grade A 14-carat phony. The next day, I let the con man and card sharp Lou Latimer tell me a few lies.
Man has a right to live down his past, Craig.
No question.
I had a few brushes with the law once. Sure, I don't deny it.
You served a few sentences?
One sentence.
Pardon the slander.
I'm a changed man today. Pillar of the community.
San Quentin community?
The way you cops love to ride a guy.
Beastly of us.
Look, I'm a respectable businessman today.
What business?
Salesman.
Selling bunco?
Machine tools.
What are you doing here at Jubilee Villa?
Vacationing.
With a deck of cards in every pocket?
I don't play cards the same old way.
Meaning?
I play for pastime.
For profit.
So I play to win. Who doesn't?
Which brings me to a basic question.
What?
An IOU. I saw Stuart Stoner give you a $6,000 piece of paper.
I won it fairly.
Even supposing you did. How come you're accepting paper from a masquerader?
A what?
A masquerader. The name Stuart Stoner is an alias. The young man is here representing himself fraudulently.
Now, wait a minute, Craig. Stoner's loaded. He's from a rich clan. The Stoner's of Milwaukee.
He is not. That's only a cardboard front. Stoner is a phony. And you know it, Latimer.
How would I know it?
Because that's how you operate. Before skinning a sucker, you check every detail of his pedigree back to the day he was born. You know how much he's worth or how little, so you can judge how much to take him for. Well?
Well, what you say is a fact that Stoner's a phony, then I've been rooked, huh? I'm holding worthless paper. Well, that's not me, huh?
It would appear. But I still wonder. Latimer.
What?
See the giant egg built in my skull up here?
Looks nasty.
Want to claim credit for it?
Oh, the way you try to cut me down.
You've some surface polish. You look distinguished in your Bermuda shorts. But you're a mug underneath and a thug.
Look, chum, if this heckling session is over...
I've got another insult, killer.
Killer?
Until you convince me otherwise, I'll go on thinking you tried to drown me last night.
So long.
1 minute, Latimer.
Now what?
A token of my very high regard for you. Love either conquers all or it surrenders. My client, Linda Paris, born plain Mary Ranzahar, ran up the white flag.
I'm leaving for home after dinner tonight.
Goodbye to Jubilee Villa.
Yes, I'm all ready and packed.
Say goodbye to Stoner yet?
Oh, we had a long talk over breakfast.
And the gist of it?
He admitted to having assumed the name of Stuart Stoner.
What is his real name?
He couldn't say. Barry, he didn't seem to know.
Really offering himself as an amnesiac, huh? Look, Blondie, I'm here on your account. I can't follow your example, pack up, scram, and forget. Leave everything unresolved. I'm a cop, at heart and by profession. I want to know who, what, and why is alias Stuart Stoner. I want to know what Lou Latimer's game is, and where the management, Otto Hensa, fits into the scheme.
And Margot.
Oh, I'm glad you brought her up. What about the Lady Margot?
She and Stuart were close when I first arrived. I suppose I cut Margot out. Stuart began to chase me.
Well, I can't blame him now.
I've seen Margot in clandestine meetings with that man Latimer down at Prippet Lake.
Anything else you've tucked away in your lovely mind as a significant detail?
Yes. Hensa kept trying to involve me with other male guests as if he...
To preserve Stoner for Margot in line with a three-way partnership. Otto Hensa, Latimer, and Margot.
I don't understand.
A three-way scheme connotes loot, wolves shearing a lamb. But where's the possible profit in Stuart Stoner? What's the bait for Hensa, Latimer, and Margot? Stoner's a phony and masquerader, a deadbeat.
Maybe Hensa, Latimer, and Margot don't actually know Stoner's a masquerader.
If they didn't know, impossible to believe as that is, if they suckered themselves in some attempted badger game, they do know now. I told Latimer that Stoner was a phony. Now, do you want to quit? Or follow through.
I'm a fool not to mind my own... All right, what do we do?
Search every inch of Stoner's room and effects. You play lookout while I play burglar. The results of searching Stoner's effects were a little frightening. Later, in a woodsy hideout, Linda and I shivered over what we found.
Barry, it's fantastic.
Lengths of copper wire, all cut down to convenient size. The tools of a strangler.
I just can't believe
then
it.
Then try believing Stoner's amazing collection of newspaper clippings. These. Mystery strangler terrorizes East End. Dateline, Minneapolis. And this one. Strangler claims elderly victim. Dateline, Seattle. And these similar clippings. Dateline, New York, Boston, Shreveport.
Well, one man, too.
Operate east, north, west, and south, all over the map.
Yes, the scope of it.
But this isn't one man's autobiographic collection of himself.
It isn't?
The dates on the clips cover almost 4 years. They represent a lot of stranglings and a lot of stranglers. A lot of stranglers. Some of whom have been caught and jailed. I recognize a few of the cases.
Then?
This is just a collection of clippings. Fetish is the word, I think. The pleasure the collector, call him psychopath, gets comes from the clippings themselves, let's say. The joy in some other fellow's crime.
Stuart is a madman.
It would appear. A madman or...
Or...
That's what somebody wants us to think. Mainly wants you to think.
Me?
So you'd scream and run, glad to escape a fate worse than...
All this is part of the scheme?
Well, that's my surmise.
For what basis do you have?
The character of Hensa Latimer and Company. Thoroughgoing connivers who play to win. They knew the cop and me would sooner or later send me up to Stoner's room. This stuff was planted for me to find. Enough to disillusion me in Stoner, but not enough to pinch him. No real evidence of a crime or an actual criminal personality.
What now?
Well, let Hensa, Latimer and Company horse themselves into believing they hold trumps. That you're scared off. That I'm disinterested in any further to-do with a nut. We make our fond farewells.
We leave Jubilee Villa?
Officially only. Unofficially, we're still around. We're holed up somewhere with our eye on this place, watching to see the next move of the gang against Stoner.
But what can they want of Stewart?
I finally come to the conclusion about that. One, Stoner is an amnesiac. Isn't sure of who he is and where from, etc. Two, he is not a poor masquerader, but a rich one after all.
Stewart, rich?
Uh-huh. Dough, position. And a good marital catch for Margot. Also a profitable game for Latimer to account for the IOUs. Also a Klondike for Hensa. Otherwise, there'd be no reason at all for a plot.
Well, that means they know Stewart's true identity.
They do, but Stewart doesn't. So will you join me in hiding, doll? Where do you hide with a blonde? Not being able to find a treehouse, we settle for an auto camp a quick 2 miles from Jubilee Villa, adjoining cabins. After 2 days of keeping Jubilee Villa under surveillance, we finally got a look at how Hensa, Latimer, and Margot planned to play their trump card. Kind of trap they had baited for a weak-minded Stoner. Sweet music in the cool of the evening piped into the grape arbor. The grape arbor set with intimate tables, a canopy of freshly cut flowers, a few picked guests, and the local parson. A marriage was taking place. Margot and Stoner, with Latimer and Hensa there to give the bride away.
You're not going to let them get married.
Shouldn't I?
Shouldn't? Oh, Barry, you're teasing.
Shh. I'll stop it, Blondie, but only at a strategic moment. The strategic moment came. The man in the high collar was reaching the end of his text.
If any man knows some reason why this pair should not be joined in the bonds of matrimony, let him now speak.
Speaking, stop the wedding.
Just astounding.
I'd played cop at Jubilee Villa fine, but I hadn't played Cupid so good. Linda left in my company, as it turned out, and not in Stuart Stoner's. That is, alias Stuart Stoner.
Stuart is really Fabian Carlyle.
So Latimer confessed. The Carlyles of Honolulu. Big shipping family.
Will his amnesia...
Might disappear, might reoccur. I'm not a doctor.
Oh, I suppose I'll always regret it.
Letting the rich one get away?
Yes.
So why did you? Stoner looked like he could be coaxed all over again.
Oh, I'm sure I'll regret it.
Want a last piece of advice?
What, Barry?
When you marry, have 8 kids. With 8 kids around, Dow, you're too busy for regrets.
You have been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, Midsummer Lunacy, was written by John Robert. The National Broadcasting Company has just brought you an NBC Radio Network production with William Gargan, starring as Barry Craig, confidential investigator, directed by Arthur Jacobson. Also heard, Hilary Hall as Linda, Alice Backus as Margot, Tony Barrett as Latimer, George Neese as Stewart, and Herb Ellis as Henser. Eddie King speaking.
From August of 1954, it's been Barry Craig, confidential investigator, with Midsummer Lunacy. Well, that's all the time we have today, but join us again next week at the same time and invite a friend to listen to more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show.
The preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved.
SSRDB San Francisco, where the big bands swing. Listening to your favorite big bands. Places like Glen Island Casino, the Coconut Grove. Relive the music and the memories. All your favorite bands from all the most exciting night spots. Coming up on Make Believe Ballroom, a part of Swing Street Radio with Craig Roberts.
Each week at this time, we present live recorded music from famous ballrooms and night spots from across the nation. In radio's early days, most of the music enjoyed by listeners came from live performances via remote. Places like the Aragon Ballroom in Chicago, the Palomar in Los Angeles, and the Palladium in New York were just a few of the locations where radio brought its microphones in order to bring fine listening and dancing music to the nation. On this edition of Swing Street Ballroom, we present a sample of just such a live broadcast. As the network announcers used to say, the nation's leading dance bands from the nation's leading dance spots. So, time now to move the furniture out of the way, roll back the carpet, and get ready to dance. It's the Swing Street Ballroom.
It's make-believe ballroom time.